Tar Heel football up to number 23 in the coaches poll this week after that memorable win over Pitt, 37-36 on a last-minute touchdown. Game that began with the national anthem protest coming to Chapel Hill as a number of Carolina football players raised their fist during the national anthem. Then they went out and took care of business on the field with that victory over the Panthers. Mitch Trubisky and Ryan Switzer named ACC Players of the Week, among others. We're joined now on the phone by Dr. Deb Stroman, sports commentator and professor at the UNC Kenan Flagler Business School. And Dr. Stroman, thanks for joining us. What do we make of that game?
Wow, I can't believe the level of engagement that a college football game can provide a community. But when you have that type of high where you actually physiologically, you go through an experience, it's just a good thing. It's just a good thing.
That's assuming you stayed all the way through, right, and didn't give up with 10 seconds left to go. Yeah.
Or those people walking back to their cars or listening to their radios or hearing the roar from the stadium or even in your living room. There's no doubt this is why people, one of the reasons why college sport is just so compelling.
Now, put this into perspective, and we've talked about this over the last couple of days ever since the game ended, but how does this rank among the most memorable games that you can remember for Tar Heel football?
Well, there's no doubt it has to be in the top five. Certainly there have been a number of All-Americans who've made the great hit, who've thrown the right ball, made amazing passes, catches. In fact, just thinking about Mac Hollins and his catches over the past few years. But the total team win, in the sense that you almost had this type of uncontrollable buzz that was just moving throughout the stadium from the coaches. You could see them trying to keep everybody organized and yet trying to control their emotions. You've got the players. You know, we have that iconic film of Jim Valvano, NC State coach, running around the court.
Yep.
He won the national championship. That was playing out a little bit. But overall, just that poise. That they were able to continue to manage the clock and maximize it to the extent that Pitt was losing control, but Carolina realized we didn't even want to give them any time if we were to score.
How does a game, a victory like that, affect the team and help them going forward? I imagine the intangibles have got to be even bigger than you can imagine.
Well, you're exactly right, and we're really talking about sports psychology and now having to manage their expectations. They have to sit back, and hopefully the leadership of the football team and even some folks externally who are working with the team to look at how did this happen? Were we truly in control, and were we navigating this entire successful outcome, or was it a loss of composure by Pitt and Pitt not being able to stay calm and focused and run the right plays and maybe do a little blitzing and things like that? That Carolina just won, so to speak, as in did they earn it. So it's really about managing expectations for the future, looking at some psychological work in terms of when you have big lottery winners and what happens to them and how so many of them just can't sustain it. We're talking about whether or not Carolina has experienced an artificial reality that's not sustainable. So they have to manage that. They have to dissect it, unpack it. And, of course, the other thought would be, with this schedule that's coming up, having Florida State, having Virginia Tech, they don't even have the time to get really, really high for more than two days at the most.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm looking at the schedule right now, and I'm seeing that game at Florida State coming up next week. You got the home game against Virginia Tech after that, and then right back out on the road to take on Miami. And those are two road games in 3 weeks against top 15 teams. If Carolina ends up losing two of those three games, as I imagine they're going to be favored to, or they're going to be underdogs in at least those two games, if assuming nothing changes in the next few weeks, are they going to be able to carry that momentum forward past that, or do they have to get a couple of big wins here now, too?
I think they do. In fact, last week I mentioned between Pitt, Florida State, Virginia Tech, and Miami that they needed to get three wins, and then they'd have the possibility to win the rest of the schedule. As much as this game really was exciting, I think deep down people are still saying, well, they should have won this one. This is the one they had to win at home. So it's a great comeback win, but they were supposed to do this.
Yep.
So the Florida State game will definitely be challenging considering how Florida State was embarrassed by Louisville. Florida State always plays a tough schedule, but now in order for them to get back into the contention for a major bowl, not college football playoff, but for a bowl, they need to have a big win over a very good program. And so they're just going to be so excited to have Chapel Hill come to town because they want to prove that not only can they beat UNC, but they're going to beat them by two or three touchdowns to say that don't dismiss us. We just had a bad day against Louisville.
Absolutely. Speaking with Dr. Deb Stroman, sports commentator and professor at the Keenan Flagler Business School. And again, looking even forward at the schedule, once they get past the Florida State and Miami, those two road games, the schedule kind of opens up for them. They got Virginia, Georgia Tech, Duke. A couple of those are road games, but all of them are against easier opponents. The Citadel, NC State, none of them are ranked. So if they can carry that momentum forward from the Pitt game and maybe pick up a win or two here that they're not supposed to in the next couple of weeks, they could run the table.
That's exactly right. And I really love what Coach Fedora was telling the team in the locker room about one game at a time. So they're 1-0. And then if they win at Florida State, they'll be 1-0. And if they win Virginia Tech, Miami, and on, it's only 1-0.
Yep.
They have to stay focused. During big games like this, when you have the NFL scouts there and top people looking at you, agents and everything, you have to consider who's getting the limelight and how they're going to stay focused around that. There's no doubt that everybody has been itching to find out whether or not Trubisky is as talented coming out of the state of Ohio as a number one player. How good is he? And so now we have this buzz on national TV about him. Will he be able to remain calm and get the ball to his players who can make plays? Bug Howard, clearly, you know, from day one, he was targeted as someone that has incredible athletic skill and skill to be able to navigate various defenses. While making that incredible one-handed catch, now the limelight is on him. And, of course, you know, there are other players on the team as well. But, again, trying to manage all of this and making sure that that limelight doesn't shine so bright that they're actually blinded.
Tar Heels 3-1 now, 1-0 in conference play. That's what's going on the field. Let's turn to off the field because we've got to talk about the protest about the national anthem where some Tar Heels were raising their fist for today's game, for Saturday's game. So that nationwide protest has now come to Chapel Hill as well, and all the more salient this week, especially considering what we saw last week in Charlotte, what we saw the week before in Tulsa, and what we're continuing to see in terms of the ongoing conversation about race and policing entering into this or re-entering into this conversation as well.
Well, one thing for sure is that we know that social justice is integrated in all parts of society, and so we just can't put it in a nice little box and tie a bow around it. It affects everyone, whether you are the target, whether you are the person who is being accused of X, Y, Z, all of this just permeates our entire society. From a sport perspective, our two biggest North Carolina, I guess you could say, prominent people, Michael Jordan, of course, he made his statement asking for a peaceful demonstration and conversation. And having spoken to some Hornet executives, I know that their facility, their store was broken into, and so they had to, again, like everyone down in Charlotte, kind of readjust business operations. I know a number of companies allowed for virtual working on Thursday and Friday. A lot of concern there. And then, of course, the other big celebrity for our state and sport is Cam Newton, the quarterback for the Panthers. And he, a lot of people feel his conversation, his statements have been a little mixed. But he was pretty clear when he stated, "I salute Colin Kaepernick for what he stands for. But at the end of the day, I can make a stand in my own right." And that's why he has his foundation trying to make a difference in the Charlotte area. But on game day, before he came out to play, he wore an MLK shirt that had the quote, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere," which basically says that I do get it, and I do support people who are peacefully protesting. So with Michael Jordan and Cam Newton making their statements, I think that did help to some of the calmness that took place on Thursday and Friday and this weekend in Charlotte.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, we're speaking with Dr. Deb Stroman, Keenan Flagler Business School, and there are a bunch of different people who are choosing to, athletes who are choosing to make statements in a variety of different ways. You've got Colin Kaepernick and a lot of people with him taking a knee. You've got people like Cam Newton who are making statements in their own ways. You've got Michael Jordan doing the same thing. Some Carolina student athletes were raising their fist during the game. Is there a substantive difference difference between an athlete who chooses to take a knee versus an athlete who chooses to raise a fist, or is it just a difference in the way that individual chooses to express themselves?
I think the most important thing for us all to remember is that this is what makes our democracy work, is our freedom to protest. And whenever someone protests our country, our government, it doesn't mean that you don't have great love and appreciation for what we have here. That is one of the major disconnects that I'm just troubled by, how people feel that because you speak up against something, it doesn't mean that you love your situation. You just want better. And I think the way we all believe in America and the potential for American greatness, we believe that it can be better. And so that's why we do want to speak up. Our country was founded on violence and protest. And to think that today that we can move forward and we can make change without protest, to me that is basically pretty absurd. You know, power is not going to let up or give up or share without some type of form of pressure. And I think these ways that people are protesting, I'm not talking about the knuckleheads who are taking advantage of a situation, but I believe that the majority of protesters in America, in particular the athletes, they are doing that in a very peaceful way to draw attention and to use their platform. One thing that Cam Newton said is that we have to hold everybody accountable, and I think that's what we need to do a better job of. And sadly, oftentimes it looks like a management versus labor type situation due to the pressures and the heavy weight that's on the labor force. But nonetheless, you still have the right as American citizen to be able to speak up and voice a sense of dissent around matters that affect you or your community.
I got to let you go here in just a second, but before we do, I want to ask you this one more thing. I know you were up in D.C. this past weekend for the opening of the National Museum of African American History, which just opened. We've got the issue in Charlotte, the ongoing national anthem protest, all of this underscoring the fact that this issue that we're seeing today is not unusual, it's not new, it's not something we haven't seen before, and in fact, we've seen it in the past, not just in the same way, but in many cases a lot worse than we're seeing it today. What is the one thing that you think people ought to know about the issue of race and policing, the issue of athlete protests in the national anthem, what's going on in Charlotte? What do you want people to know that they don't know?
Well, I'll do this because I probably have a list of at least 10 things, but the one that I will speak on today at this moment is the fact that I think we need to get more knowledge, more understanding around this language, or we should dismiss this language of let's just get rid of the bad apples.
Mm-hmm.
I love Dr. Frank Baumgartner's work, a political science professor here at UNC who's done extensive research on this, looking at policing and law enforcement in our area, also done things around the entire state, and he's called on as a national speaker. But one thing that's clear is people say, well, if we just get rid of the bad apples, the guys and gals who, you know, just break the rules and people just kind of know there's something wrong with them, they're not policing well. Well, when you remove those bad apples, you still have negative outcomes. And that's what Dr. Baumgartner's research talks about.
Yep.
So it's not about bad apples or good cops versus bad cops. It is one law enforcement. It is one police force. And when you have people, whether you're your peers, your colleagues, who are doing things that, it's one thing if you steal something at work. It's another thing if you forget to turn off the lights and run up the energy bill. But we're talking about the taking of someone's life, killing someone. And to just turn a blind eye because something's wrong with that person, or, oh, that's just the way he or she polices really hard, or, you know, the cover-up. That's how it moves from an individual basis to a systemic to an institutional concern that many, many people are concerned about. And that's why people are protesting and saying, we can do better, America. We have got to stop turning our backs to behaviors. And again, whether you're on the side that is not speaking up against the bad behavior or whether or not you are one who is committing the bad behavior, all of it is just one part of the system.
Dr. Deb Stroman, UNC Kenan Flagler Business School, thank you so much.
Thank you.